Welcome back from your walking meditation. So again, my name is Roy Reamer, and I'm the executive director at Zen Hospice Project in San Francisco. And I've been involved with Zen Hospice Project and hospice since 1997, when I first trained to sit at the bedside of people who were dying. I also guide earth-based rites of passage programs out in the wilderness. So these are modern-day initiation practices. So these two occupations of mine inform the talk that I'm offering you tonight. So this is my third time here, and the first time I was here, I gave a talk on death and dying. The second time, I gave a talk on chronic illness. And tonight, I'm going to talk about grief. So it's amazing to me that y'all keep inviting me back. I mean, it's not, you know, these aren't feel-good topics, right? I promise if I have the honor of being back here again, I'll pick a topic that's joyful and uplifting. So just a little bit more about me as giving some context. So the story I tell, and it's just the story, is that I was born into the field of grief. I'm the second child of my father, Bernard, and my mother, Phyllis. And my mother's father died when she was about 15. And at that time, as you can imagine, you know, there really wasn't much support around such losses like that. And my namesake, my mother's father, his name was Roy. So, as I said, I'm the second child. And as my parents would say, you know, they were waiting for a Roy. My older sister's name is Robin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have a wonderful relationship, but that piece was a little complicated as children and coming up. But in many ways, I felt like I was born into the situation where I was support for my mother in still coping with that major loss. And from a very early age, the field of grief became not necessarily comfortable, but familiar. And, well, there's more to say about that, but maybe that's enough for the moment. So in thinking about tonight, I approach this as a bit of an inquiry. You know, how do we grieve mindfully? Or how does our practice or our meditation inform our experience of grieving? I think, well, I know this is a universal experience, this issue of grief. I was asking myself, you know, is there an alternative to grief other than either getting swept away by it, unconsciously, I would say, or turning away from it, right? And finally, you know, what are the gifts of grief that support us in our own lifetime and help us be in sangha or community? As I mentioned, needless to say, you know, grief is pervasive. You know, we are in this moment, and as I look around the room, I see that most of us are of a particular age where we've experienced a lot of loss in our lives. So I want to acknowledge and honor the wisdom that's in this room around grief and grieving. You know, we live in a time where there's a lot of chaos around us. And I think it's fair to say we live in a time where we may be watching this planet, this earth of ours, actually falling away. And I think this is a piece of grief that isn't really widely acknowledged in society quite yet. A former volunteer, he has done a lot of writing on this idea of Earth Hospice. This is a former Zen Hospice Project volunteer. And it may be our time. You know, nothing lasts forever. Could it be that for those of us in the room who are younger, we'll actually see the demise of this planet? So this is a great source of grief. So it's pervasive. And I just want to acknowledge this is a big topic. So we only have an hour. So we'll see what we can figure out together. So I think it's fair to say that it was this relationship with grief and this curiosity about grief that led me initially into the hospice work. When my grandmother died, I was with her at the end of her life, near the end of her life, and this brought up such intense curiosity about death that had been part of my life for so long. And a couple people who I worked with at the time were hospice volunteers, and they said, you know, you might enjoy this work. So that's really all it took. And so since I began training in hospice, I've had the opportunity, for better or worse, to observe a lot of people who are dying, who are holding grief over their own death, but a lot of family members as well, as they were preparing to ultimately say goodbye to their loved one. So I'm no expert on the topic, but one thing that I have learned is that it's really important to give oneself full permission to grieve. Yeah. And so I remember when my mother died about 2.5 years ago, going back to the Detroit area where I'm from. And in some ways, arriving there and feeling prepared, and in other ways, realizing there was nothing that could prepare me for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, both were true. And I'm really grateful for everything I've learned over the years that helped me cope with that experience and support my family. But I do remember very clearly, well, my mother died in the ICU, and I had this bias for so long that that was the worst possible death. And that bias has since shifted. But it was this very peculiar thing, because when it became obvious that she was not going to recover from the illness that the condition that had her there, then it became apparent to me that I had to help my father and my sister understand that the most compassionate thing to do would be to take her off life support. So we knew exactly when she was going to die. You know, within a few minutes or half hour or something. So what it provided was this opportunity for the entire family to come in, who hadn't already arrived, and be around her bed when we took her off intubation, and when we took her off the life support machines. So the evening before, we all knew that we were going to show up the next day at a particular time. And that was probably the most challenging, that night was probably the most challenging experience I've ever had in my life. I was in a hotel with my wife and, you know, just all night long struggling with this beast of grief, knowing what was happening. And what do they say, the dark night of the soul, you know. And even in the midst of that, there was this little piece where I knew that this too would pass, I would get through this. And that was really the only consolation. So I've come to believe that, you know, no amount of preparation, no matter how much we meditate or, you know, study the Dharma or, you know, deepen our practice, nothing can really prepare us for that kind of loss. But yet, there is consolation in knowing that we have the capacity to deal with this kind of pain. So even though nothing will make it better. And we know through our practice that everything shifts and changes and comes to an end. Even experiences like that. And what I find, you know, a couple years out now, fascinating to me is the grief I hold for the loss of that grief. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but, you know, there was such a, it helped me feel so close to my mother, you know, that intense grief after she died. And even that goes, like everything, you know, things shift. So some of you may know this poem. This is from the poet Ellen Bass. The thing is to love life, to love it even when you have no stomach for it, when everything you've held dear crumbles like burnt paper in your hands, and your throat is filled with the silt of it. When grief sits with you so heavily, it is like heat, tropical, moist, thickening the air so it's heavy like water, more fit for gills than lungs. When grief weights you like your own flesh, only more of it, an obesity of grief. How long can a body withstand this, you think? And yet, you hold life like a face between your palms, a plain face with no charming smile or twinkle in her eye. And you say, yes, I will take you. I will love you again. So this business of, you know, paying attention carefully, this business of mindfulness of grief, you know, I find a little bit like what's described in the poem. Even when that grief is so intense and so heavy, it just weights us down and is so debilitating, we know that there's a moment after this one, and then the next, and then the next. And we take life again. So I encourage us to just take a moment, and check in with ourselves. Just simply check in with whatever physical sensations you may be holding in this moment. Whatever it is. Check in with the emotional landscape that you find yourself in this moment. And check in with the thoughts or stories you may be telling yourself in this moment. You know, grief can bring up so much of us depending on where we're at and who or what we're in the midst of saying goodbye to. So I know many of you are familiar with this story, but I so appreciate it. I think it bears repeating again and again, but the mustard seed story, Kisa Gotami, yeah, some of you are shaking your head. So this woman who is bereft, just overwhelmed, overcome with her grief because she has her dead child in her arms. And she's told to go see the wise one, to go see the Buddha. And so in her state, she goes to see the Buddha and she pleads with the Buddha to please revive her child. And the wise one, knowing that this child cannot be revived and knowing the universality of grief, but this young mother does not yet know, instructs her to go to the village, and if she can gather a mustard seed from any household that has not experienced this kind of loss, has not experienced death or grief, to bring that mustard seed back, and the child would be revived. And so Kisa Gotami goes into the village and knocks on the doors, and she finds herself in relationship with these others who have experienced such loss. And what I love about this story is that it's not just about Kisa Gotami learning, finally, the universality of loss, that we all deal with loss and grief, but that she is brought into community and she receives the support she needs in this process. So I hope you'll participate with me in just a little bit of an exercise, just to really bring us all together and to really drive this home and to help us understand, you know, who's with us tonight and who's in this sangha. And for those of you in the front rows, I really encourage you, if it's possible, if it's comfortable, just to turn toward the center if you can, when you can. And for all of us, if it's comfortable, by a show of hands, please just simply reply to the following questions, okay? And we'll see what we notice. So, who has ever lost a meaningful object to them? Who has ever lost a meaningful object? Okay. Thank you. Who has ever changed their place of residence? Who has ever experienced a change in occupation, role, or responsibility? Yeah. Who has ever experienced the loss of possibility or the loss of a dream? Maybe you thought you'd become something that you haven't yet and you feel like time is running out. Okay. Who has ever experienced a significant change in health or physical capability? Who has ever experienced the end of a relationship? Who has ever experienced the death of a favorite actor, musician, or public figure? Just a couple more. Who has ever experienced the death of a friend? Who has ever experienced the death of a spouse or life partner? Okay. Who has ever experienced the death of a loved one, including an animal companion? Yeah. So this series of questions is certainly not exhaustive. You know, there are other things that cause us grief. And so again, I just want to, you know, acknowledge the experience and wisdom that's in the room around this topic. So sooner or later, we're all touched. And yet, this isn't true for everyone out there. So the young ones, they don't know yet. And I'm going to come back to this, but I want to mention it now, right? So here we are, so many of us, you know, raise our hands for, if not all of them, almost all of them, right? But yet we know there are some out there who don't quite know yet. So I think it's useful to differentiate between types of grief. So I like to think of grief as having, you know, three different types. The first I would describe as acute grief. And so this is really the grief I described that night before my mother died, when we knew when she would die. This is the kind of grief that's overwhelming. The kind of grief that just takes us down. The kind of grief where we find ourselves really inconsolable. So this is often born out of sudden loss or major loss. I guess you could describe this as fresh grief or new grief. And in my experience, this kind of acute grief can last a long, long time, and it can also be very short-lived. You know, this is also the kind of grief that we begin to question if all these years of practice has done us any good whatsoever, you know. Yeah. It can be really difficult in these experiences of grief to see the usefulness or value of our practice. Sometimes people describe grief in terms of waves. Maybe you've heard this, the grief wave. I had one just the other day. I received a text message from my sister who lives in Chicago, and there was a family we used to spend a lot of time with when I was a kid, and I would call the parents of that family Aunt Norma and Uncle Roy, and my sister was texting me to tell me that Aunt Norma had just died. Now, the interesting thing is that there was a bit of a falling out between Norma and Roy, my parents. And so we were out of touch for many, many years. I think the last time I saw them was maybe, 20, 25 years ago. And yet when I found out that Norma had died a few days ago, the wave just took me. And I was at work, you know, in the midst of the workspace with people around me. And I was surprised. I didn't expect that. And I think maybe it was because of the relationship between Norma and my mother brought this up, you know. But this kind of acute grief. The second type of grief I would describe as chronic. So this is low-level grief that just feels constant. And I'm 57, older than some of you, not as old as others of you. But I find the older I get, the more the grief just feels like it's there. You know, it's not acute, it's not intense, but I almost kind of wear it like a cloak or something. It's just kind of there. And, you know, if we're blessed to live long enough, this grief just becomes a natural part of our life. So one thing I've learned in the hospice work is that what contributes to this chronic grief is just the accumulation of small losses. Yeah. So in that list of questions, you know, who has ever lost a meaningful object? Well, you know, big deal in the grand scope of things, but not to put too fine a point on it, but if we don't pay attention to whatever grief we experience around small losses, you know, maybe we hear about someone who we kind of knew but didn't know very well. If we're not paying attention, what I have found is these things can accumulate. And then we are triggered. You've heard of these grief triggers. You know, we find ourselves in situations, maybe a movie, or we hear about somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who died, and it brings a lot up for us. So, yeah, I think this is why it's really important to give even these small losses their due. And there have been some really interesting studies around, you know, the role of ritual in honoring loss. And ritual is a way of processing grief. And so I think this is where our awareness practice comes in really, really handy. So when we experience what I would describe as a minor loss, you know, can we attune to our own experience carefully enough to really know how we're holding it? And then finally, the third type of grief, anticipatory. And this one, yeah, some of you know what I'm talking about. this can be really problematic. I don't know if I like that word, problematic. This can be a big part of our experience, particularly when we're witnessing someone who is in the early stages of an illness. This is really big among people who are living with someone with a dementia-related illness. They experience a lot of anticipatory grief. Yeah. This dread of what's coming, you know. And it's in this anticipatory grief where I find our mindfulness practice particularly supportive. Yeah. So let us notice when we're projecting ourselves out into the future too much and just stay with what's here. So, to a large degree, I would say these types of grief are dependent upon the type of loss that we're experiencing. So again, you know, personal major loss. Bearing witness to the chaos or suffering in society or the environment around us is another type. Last weekend, I was out in the Hoover Wilderness, just north of Yosemite. I went in from the east side of the Sierra Mountains and spent three nights out there. And what I noticed was the absence of the songbirds. And I don't remember it being like that, you know. And so, here I was, bearing witness to that change, and it brought up a lot for me. And then there's the loss of personal change, right? And I think we often underestimate, like I asked this question about changing residence, you know, that can create a lot of grief, and it's not widely acknowledged. You know, we live in this culture where grief isn't really honored particularly well, it seems to me. If some of you, you know, work for a company, you probably have a week or two of bereavement leave. I find grief in the workplace is really problematic. People just don't know how to hold it because no one wants to talk about it. And it's something that I'm quite passionate about, actually. Sometimes I have these opportunities to go into companies and talk about the way loss shows up, you know, in the corporate environment, in the office environment. And I really like to get people talking about this, you know. It can often be that elephant in the room. No one wants to really address it. So, what does it mean to grieve mindfully, or to grieve informed by our spiritual practice? So, take a moment and think about that. So, some of you have been doing this for many, many years, coming and listening to teachers talk about the Dharma, sitting meditation. Others of you may be newer to the practice, but what have you noticed about your own practice and how it informs your grief experience? So again, for me, based on my practice in the Zen tradition and the work I've done in hospice, I've learned the importance of, you know, giving oneself over to the grief experience, and, you know, not in an indulgent way, because I think we can get attached to the poignancy or the aliveness that grief can actually bring into our lives, but to simply be with fully the grief experience and not push it away like so many people do. We see this around us all the time. Yeah, I'm just reminded of, there's this wonderful teacher from West Africa, if I remember correctly. Her name is Sobhomfu Somme. Some of you may know or be familiar with her husband, former husband, Melodome Somme. And I did a grief ritual with her, and it was this day long at CIIS, this big deal. And I remember her talking in her beautiful accent about going to a gas station one day. And she pulled up to the pump, and then she realized she had pulled in front of this car. She didn't realize she had done that. And the person got out of their car and started screaming at her and yelling at her. And she described to us her response, which was, "What is wrong with you? Why are you giving me your grief?" And it occurred to me, yeah, that's what we do. You know, we give people our grief when things don't go quite right for us, you know. Because we often, most of us don't have very healthy ways of dealing with our grief, so it leaks out, right? So I think grieving mindfully means we actually give ourselves permission to grieve, to meet our experience as it is. So this phrase, you know, being with things as they are. So to fully acknowledge, you know, the enormity of the grief experience, if that's what it is for you. So I like this idea of getting really curious about our grief. Yeah. And, you know, looking at the way that, you know, the, well, I would say grief is essentially, or primarily an emotional experience. So certainly it's closely linked to a cognitive process, to a thinking process where, you know, our thoughts of our loved one can create the emotional experience. But this kind of curiosity that I'm talking about is uncoupling, if you will, the thoughts from the emotions and the body sensations, you know, that are part of the emotions. And to get really curious about this and notice where it's held in the body, for instance. So getting very curious and cultivating this ability to stay with the emotions, stay with the physical sensations when our thoughts about the experience itself or the experience of loss pull us away. Right? And to simply come back to the sensation. I'll often, when I'm experiencing grief, I'll often say to myself, "Ah, this is what grief feels like. I am having an experience of sadness." Locating it in the body. And yeah, this is where grief expresses itself. So, there's something that I have found really useful when practicing with staying with the emotions. And it's very simple. It works with the breath. You know, on the inhale, I'm grounding. On the exhale, release. On the inhale, sensing. On the exhale, surrender. Right? So, grounding, release. Sensing, surrender. So this helps us let go of the thoughts and sense into what's really happening in the body. So recently I saw this play in Berkeley at the Aurora Theater. Did anyone else see The Year of Magical Thinking based on the Joan Didion book? I hope it comes back. If it does, I highly recommend it. Maybe some of you have read the book. You know, this was, yeah, the book about the death of her husband and her daughter's illness at the same time. And Those of you familiar with Joan Didion know she was just this fierce intellect and very head-centered. And so what the play reminded me of in the book was the way Joan Didion really thought she could think her way out of the grief. Yeah. And the book creates this really powerful tension between her thinking experience and her emotional experience that I think it's fair to say she just simply didn't want to have. I think the same could be said for her physical experience in those circumstances. So this is what it's like for those of us who are really head-centered, you know. So I'm here to tell you, you can't really think your way out of this. You know, not to dismiss thoughts when it comes to loss entirely, but, you know, can we stay in contact with the physical sensations, with the emotions? So we're cultivating the ability to pay close attention to grief. And so this allows us to really see the transformational power of the experience itself. You know, maybe not when we're in the midst of acute grief, but when we're really paying attention, we begin to see that there is a transformation taking place. And that there are actually gifts in the experience that come from grief. There's growth for us individually, but also for those in our life who will also someday experience loss. Okay, so I'm curious to know if any of you have any thoughts of your own about this. So how has your practice of meditation informed your grief experience? What have you noticed? Maybe you can think of how your experience of grief changed after you began your practice from before. Anyone at all? Yes, Mary? Oh, yeah.
Acute grief, because my experience is like a cannon blew a hole through my being. Just what I've come to realize is that for the one where we think are thinking about, you know, the possibilities of things that are going to happen. To remind myself that I'm here now, the person that I love is here now, and that that's the experience that I'm having now, and not to waste my moment that I'm having, and to have the joy of that as best as I'm able, and it's really been a beautiful gift, you know, not to. Because the proliferation of thoughts, as it just goes, it's gone, and I've really had it's really been very helpful. Is just realizing that, you know, this moment is like this, and this is really, it's actually quite nice. It's actually very, there's a certain sweetness that you can have, and I've even experienced that after the fact, after, you know, like someone I love, because I'm 7 years old, people have died. And then, I'll just do a plug, there was a great conversation between Stephen Colbert and Anderson Cooper about grief. It was, it was really how I felt about it, is that we have this connection to our fellow human beings. And if you can, you know, that's the benefit. That's the benefit, is that we all know that we have this experience.
Yes, thank you. That, and as you said so beautifully, you know, grief helps us arrive at this place of really appreciating what we have in this moment, because we know it's going to go. Yeah. How about others? Anyone else have anything they want to say on the subject? Okay, so I don't know your name. I'm sorry. But you've been here before. You look familiar to me.
My name's Meredith.
Hi, Meredith.
Relationships, all of which were not healthy, and were mostly fantasy on my own. and very much wrapped around survival behavior. So I'm in this process of sometimes I feel a lot of grief and some confusion, and then I don't for a while. But I happened to listen to a man in a different kind of meeting who is grieving the loss of his sister. And I was, in a certain sense, and so deeply encouraged, that's not quite the right word, but the depth of his love for his sister, which he didn't express theoretically, I loved her so much, but through very intimate experiences, very ordinary, very intimate experiences that they had together, he and his sister, when they were children. And he would say, you know, and you and I used to do this together, and you did this for me. And the depth of that man's love, so much began and is allowed, giving me a lot of permission. I, in my fear and aversion of my deep feelings, forget that it's all about, or, you know, grief is rooted in love. Yeah. And that's the freedom, and that's the wonder.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, you know, that's the honoring or the beauty.
Thank you, that's beautiful.
It was such a gift from him.
Yeah. You know, if I may, you're reminding me of something else I think is quite relevant, both in the story you shared about yourself, but the story that you shared about this man, and that is, you know, a natural part of the dying process is this life review. And so, so many people I've witnessed at the end of their life, they are going through this process of review. And, you know, we live complicated lives. And so things can be unresolved, and there we are at the very end of life, and we're thinking back on them. And it can bring up grief, it can bring up confusion, it can bring up anger. So I guess, you know, where this is taking me is let us not wait until the very end to process that kind of grief that is born out of recalling something so long ago as our childhood, you know. So, yeah, this is a very real part of the grief experience when we think back on certain parts of our life that may cause us some confusion or unhappiness. Yeah. Thank you. There's another person here. Yeah.
So I'm not sure how to say this or even if I want to say it, but the question, I like it a lot, how has my practice informed or changed or allowed? I think, and this is something I learned at Green Gulch many years ago, where they have that big ABC see calligraphy up on the wall. And my teacher at the time, Ivan Ren, told us he meant a bigger container. So one of the ideas that I've always held is to have a bigger container. So allowing myself all the complaints and catches in the world around whatever I didn't get that I see as a loss, and at the same time being able, in the exact same time, you know, maybe 2 seconds later, being grateful for the blessings that I have, that I'm still on this planet, and here I am. Look at this. Look at all of you. So I found that people have a hard time hearing what hurts, and they see it as negativity or complaining or something. And maybe I didn't realize it was me grieving, but there was an empathy or understanding for it. The death of this, the loss of health, moving here, whatever. But the joy for me is that I can now allow myself to have it and not think there's anything wrong with me, because I'm also at the same time very grateful for everything I still have and can look forward to. Just being here right this minute.
Thank you. And I wonder if the gratitude for what you had that was lost is in the mix there as well.
Sometimes, yes.
Sometimes,
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really glad I had that when I had that, even though I may have lost it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, there's a comment in the back there.
Okay. This is very, very brief. Many years ago, I went down to a retreat in South Carolina. Rare Baba, I don't know if that may something I'm letting. I have been reading about him, and he was a spiritual figure from the Middle East who didn't speak during the last 25 years of his life. So I went to the retreat, I put my bags down on my bed, I walked down to the office, where there was a huge portrait, as huge as the Buddha is behind you. And there was, that is Buddha's, there was a huge picture of Mirabai. And suddenly, I broke down in these tears of grief. And it made me realize what a connection there was between grief and love.
Yeah.
It just swept over me. So that's all I wanted to share.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, sometimes I talk about this this mountain, where on one side we have sadness and loss, and on the other we have joy and love and gratitude. And every now and then we find ourselves at the very pinnacle, we don't know which side we're on, you know. And it's just that sensation of holding these simultaneous truths in our experience. So thank you for your sharing. And just to honor the clock, I'm going to start to wrap up here a little bit. Like I said, this is a big topic, right? So we could spend days here. So I've heard the translation or the story of the Buddha's last instruction many times before, and I'm a huge fan of Mary Oliver, but this poem is new to me. So Mary Oliver writes the Buddha's last instruction. "Make of yourself a light," said the Buddha before he died. "I think of this every morning as the east begins to tear off its many clouds of darkness, to send up the first signal, a white fan streaked with pink and violet, even green. An old man, he lay down between two sala trees, and he might have said anything, knowing it was his final hour. The light burns upward. It thickens and settles over the fields. Around him, the villagers gathered and stretched forward to listen. Even before the sun itself hangs, disattached in the blue air, I am touched everywhere by its ocean of yellow waves. No doubt he thought of everything that had happened in his difficult life. And then I feel the sun itself as it blazes over the hills, like a million flowers on fire. Clearly, I'm not needed. Yet I feel myself turning into something of inexplicable value. Slowly, beneath the branches, he raises his head. He looks into the faces of that frightened crowd. He looks into the faces of that frightened crowd. So, I love this poem, and I'm sitting with this question: what is frightening them? Is it the mystery of witnessing the true nature that they see in the Buddha's gaze? Is it the loss of their teacher? Is it the reminder that we all will die? So, I think the most important thing I've learned working with the dying and their families is that there is no roadmap to grief and grieving. It's uncharted territory. And don't let anyone ever tell you how the grief experience is supposed to go. It's simply unknown and mysterious. And in its uncertainty, even chaos, the grief experience connects us all to each other. And grief is this passage, this threshold that quite often tears us apart. But then as we pass through that portal, we are remembered into a new reality. And so integrating grief into our spiritual practice builds our capacity to be fully present to our own suffering and allows us to show up more fully to others who perhaps have not yet had this big experience of loss, who may need our support during times of grieving. So even in our grief, we can be a light and show up fully for the benefit of all beings. So thank you.